Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast Supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Finding your perfect home was hard, but thanks to Burrow, furnishing it has never been easier. Burrow's easy-to-assemble modular sofas and sectionals are made from premium, durable materials, including stain and scratch-resistant fabrics. So they're not just comfortable and stylish, they're built to last. Plus, every single Burrow order ships free right to your door. Right now, get 15% off your first order at burrow.com/ACAST. That's 15% off at burrow.com/ACAST.
Welcome to Hoovering, the podcast about eating. I'm Jessica Fostercue. I love eating as much as anything else in the world, but also it sometimes brings me conflict, shame, and all sorts of other things that are rubbish. It's complicated and I think fascinating. This is a conversation with an interesting soul, not just about food, but about gobbling it up, or if you will, hoovering. Welcome. This is a lovely episode you're joining us for. I'm talking to a real-life professional food writer for the first time. A professional eater, no less. Who you've no doubt read in various broadsheets and stuff over the years. She's called Emma Sturgis. And she doesn't just write about food. She's an extremely talented maker of it, too. But first things first, I've got a tiny bit of business to address. Business. First up, there's a few tickets left for my Hoovering live shows coming up in London, and I've announced my amazing guests. On the 27th of January, I'll be joined by Anthony Amourdou off this last series of Bake Off, and he'll be baking. Also a comedian who's so funny, I am regularly brought into real, genuine, gut-twisting physical pain from laughing so much at her. It's the amazing Lou Sanders, and the seriously cool activist, writer, and all-round excellent feminist smasher, Salma El-Wadani. There's only a few tickets left for that, so rush. Also, on Monday the 28th of January, we've got an equally stunning lineup. It's celebrity MasterChef semi-finalist and brilliant comedian Zoe Lyons, writer and engineer Yasmin Abdel-Majid, and kick-ass award-winning actor and writer whose star is rising like a rocket at the moment, Millie Thomas. And I've lined up some very talented and cool food merchants to bring us all things to try eating, but also bring snacks. So, for tickets and be fast, go to unrestrictedview.co.uk/the-hoovering-podcast-live. Last little bit of admin to blather on about, but just a cheerful request to please keep up the good work spreading this podcast like wildfire. Tell every twit you ever meet about it. Rate it, review it, subscribe to it. And if you've got any spare money at all, here's how I'm helping this beast survive and eventually, maybe even one day grow. I'm on a site called Patreon, where you can swap wedge for rewards like, lots of the rewards involve getting discounted tickets to all my live events, just like the one I bragged about just then. So if you might be able to help on that front, go to patreon.co.uk/thehooveringpod. Let's get into this one then. You join us on a Sunday morning in Emma's Manchester home, which is bursting with beautiful recipe books, and Emma's made the most incredible hummus on toast I've ever eaten. Seriously rich, silky, creamy, hearty, properly sexy, simple brunch. And then, breakfast pudding, which was the most delicious vegan cake I've ever had. Both of them from Nigella Recipes, which are, in the podcast notes on Acast. But my God, what heavenly cooking from Emma too. Oof, what a lucky trout I am.
We're eating Nigella's miso hummus on, is it sourdough?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, and we've drizzled it with sesame seeds.
Toasted sesame seeds.
Toasted. and sesame oil, which is, I could just sniff it all day.
It's really good, actually. I've not made it before, but it is good.
Oh my god. Oh. That's so yummy. That's so yummy. It's really creamy.
Yeah.
What's the process? Did you have to, like, take the skin off a load of chickpeas?
Well, I did. But that's partly because I couldn't find... So, ideally, I think there would be jarred sesame seed... jarred chickpeas.
Yeah.
The Spanish ones in the big, you know, the big sesame jar.
Are they just way better? My mum says so, but I've rarely told the difference.
I've got a book on pulses up there. And,
right.
And I think it's Jenny Chandler. And she... I had to review it years ago and I kept it because it's really lovely.
Right.
I don't cook a lot out of it, but her recommendation is either jarred chickpeas for hummus with tahini,
right.
Either jarred chickpeas or take the skins off. So there was an advert on the telly last night, so I took some skins off.
You are very lovely, Emma. I've only ever made hummus once and I took all the skins off and I went, never again. And
well,
then the person I fed it to said, you don't need to do that. But I think this is way creamier. Oh, it's lush.
I think it might be.
I wonder if you could even use sesame oil as a hand moisturiser.
Mm.
It's a smell that I want. Maybe I'd be overdoing it if I got to smell it all the time.
It's really good. It's got that umami thing going on that presumably if you're not eating loads of dairy and things, you kind of take that where you can, presumably, and sesame's got...
Also, if you're not eating meat and dairy, or you're vegan, or whatever, you flirt with veganism, like me, then you, I don't know, I do feel like, I should put it this way, I'm surprised at how I'm still finding new nice breakfasts. I think breakfast used to be the meal that would trouble me most because I'm a big egg fan.
Mm.
And then it'd be like, so I felt like, oh, okay, I can have an avocado and some spinach on some toast, whatever, peanut butter, crumpets.
Yeah,
like, all these things are done. And then you discover... Then I discovered, like, making my own bircher without pro yoghurt, which tastes exactly the same. I can't tell the difference between that and yoghurt, but maybe you can.
I'm not an oat person, unless they're in a flapjack.
Oh, really?
Cooked oat, yes.
Don't granola. Like a creamy oat.
I don't like a creamy oat. It's not my bag, so... the kids have porridge, but I kind of make it, you know, holding my nose.
Do you? Just too much like gruel or something.
It's just got that kind of like undertone of kind of, I don't know, it's a little bit musky and a bit milky and just, it's just not my area.
Fair enough.
Mm.
Oh God, I didn't think, because you're a restaurant critic, ex-restaurant critic, you're just going to be brilliant at describing food. I don't know, you know, I mean, anyone can do a podcast, but it's one of my major things that I'm hoping I get better at. Because I just go, it's really nice about everything. No, I did a live show yesterday of this podcast, and there were four of us all just going, that's nice. And I was like, right, can we stop and take a minute and try and think of other words than nice?
I think when you've got a blank page in front of you and a blinking cursor and you've got... The most difficult reviews are the 3 stars, you know, where it's not amazing, it's not terrible, the service was pleasant, the food was well cooked but not remarkable, and then, you know, it's not remarkable. There are no remarks to make about it.
Any remarks you do make sound unjustifiedly fawning or cruel.
Yes. So that middle ground, you know, a lot of that is filled with descriptions, so the more descriptive you can... Well, that's my, you know... If I've been asked for 600 words, you know, I've got to produce them. So the describing takes some.
So do you write about restaurants still now?
I do little bits. I do Pro V Punter for Olive magazine occasionally.
Cool.
So because I'm up here, so that gives them a bit of a northern perspective on bits and pieces.
Yeah, wicked.
And I do a bit of restaurant judging. There's a couple of awards that I'm involved with, Manchester Food and Drink Festival Awards.
And that's on at the moment, isn't
it?
Yeah,
it is, yeah.
That's very cool.
Yeah, no, it's lovely. It's been going for a long time now.
But you did do it more, and I think it's one of those... So I just want to know what it's like, really, because on paper you go, right, get to eat food for my job and think about it and write about it. And on paper, for me, that's something I'd hear and go, yes, the dream.
Yeah, I'll take
but
that.
Ultimately, I assume it's not. For loads of reasons, but the ones I can predict would be, much like in comedy, if you're over-immersed in something, it kind of ruins it a bit for you. As a comedian, you go and watch comedy sometimes. If someone's really, really throwing shit at the wall, if someone's really, really avant-garde or really tanking or whatever, then sometimes you can really barely laugh. Or just a master of the craft. But ultimately, you don't really laugh at comedy anymore when you're a comedian. You'll look at a brilliant comedian and go, very funny.
So it becomes like an academic exercise, like, of assessment.
Yeah, you suck the soul out of it a little bit through that.
Yeah.
I don't know. Does that happen?
I think it probably happens to chefs because they're trying to do that thing. They're trying to do that, have that creative moment of cooking. They're cooking for a living. I am writing about cooking for a living, and it's different. So I'm not looking at it thinking, why didn't I do that? Because I ain't doing it. You know, I cook for my family and I cook. Yeah. I love cooking and I decorate cakes and do bits and pieces. But I've not for a long... I used to work in restaurants as a teenager and on and off throughout my life. But I'm not thinking, you know, how can my hummus on toast be the absolute bollocks of hummus on toast?
I think it's the best hummus on toast I've ever had.
Win.
It's the bollocks. It's the absolute bollocks.
But I'm not looking at it thinking, well, he put some preserved lemon on as a garnish, you know, maybe I should... It doesn't spoil it in that way. I mean, I eat a lot. I eat out a lot. And I think the only thing that gets to you is when something is... A restaurant is cynical and it's only as good as they think it needs to be. And, you know, they know it's not that great, but that's not relevant to their bottom line. It doesn't matter.
Yeah.
And that's the thing that gets to you, and that's the thing that you find more often than you would think.
Really? In the UK?
Yeah.
I would say... Do you think it's in tourist places? I feel like there's an element of... I've certainly been on lots of holidays where there's only one place at the top of that hill, so that place can be shit.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, and there is that. And service stations. Yeah. Obviously, the prime example, apart from the lovely T-Bay and Gloucester services, which are amazing. I would say more for me, it's chain restaurants or places, in tourist attractions or places where there's a big name chef attached, perhaps, in the middle ground.
Mm.
Places that are really flash. So we're quite close to some areas where I've heard restaurateurs say and chefs say, doesn't matter, more money than sense.
Right.
You can do whatever as long as you've got good cocktails and table service, you're grand. You don't need to worry.
Yeah, really? Yeah. Because the area is so wealthy.
Well, yeah, and that people aren't necessarily in there for the food. It's for the scene or whatever. So there's cynicism.
Wankers.
Yeah, but not... Luckily, not everyone.
No, not everyone is a wanker. No. That could be the motto of today's podcast.
Gavel.
Like that. Gavel. I think with the thing with being the critic in of the food, I get the impression with comedy critics, and I'm sorry I keep comparing them, that's obviously all with the most known comedy critics, and they're not known like food writers are, because obviously a lot more people are interested in food than they are in comedy, and rightly so, they seem to sort of hate comedy a bit. That doesn't happen to you with food. You don't go, oh God, not another meal, like, not another restaurant.
It doesn't happen to me. So I was a full-time freelance food writer for 10 years, but that encapsulates a lot of different things. So to put literally toast on the table, I've done long reports about food retail for the grocer. So, you know, BSM, what do you think that is?
Oh God, I feel like I should know this. My dad worked in wine sales.
Ah.
So we always did get the grocer. I'm not that I've ever read anything more than the glossy cover.
Well, it's full of excellent in-depth reports. It's butter, spread and margarine.
Butter, spread and margarine.
So those kind of category reports. And then I've done... Yeah, I know, but it's surprisingly fascinating. You find out that the north of England prefers Lerpak, whereas southerners like Anchor.
Really?
Yeah, you would think it would be the other way around, maybe.
You would, and I'm from a southern family of Lerpakers.
Maybe I've got it. Maybe it is the other way around, but I'm sure it struck me that... And that's then I funny. Thought, well, oh, but the north is closer to Denmark. Maybe it's that. Could be.
I'm sure they're all really concerned about the carbon footprint and they've all thought about it that far. that's funny.
Yeah, so you find it fascinating. Yeah, and you look at the way people shop and the way people interact with supermarkets, which are inevitably a big part of our lives, etc. So I've done enough stuff in food to make it varied, and food people are generally just absolutely lovely.
Brilliant.
I don't think I've ever met a cheesemaker who's also a massive tool. Like, they're all
really
nice. Yeah, they're all nice.
That's lovely to know, isn't it? It's like one of those adages you can pass down to your grandkids. I've got a friend whose mum always taught her that if a man's in brown shoes, he's a bastard. And I quite like the idea that we can maybe pass on to our children. If she's a cheesemaker, she's probably a good egg.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Say scrumdiddlyumptious.
No!
And then you can be in my podcast.
Scrumdiddlyumptious.
I've just realised that behind you and behind me are a wall of amazing food books.
Yeah.
That is very cool.
Well, this is... I had to slim it down because it was getting ridiculous.
Is this the Pear Dam Library?
This is like a quarter of what it was.
Really?
Yeah,
did you? What did you do? Go, right, I'm not using these. Get rid of the ones I'm not using.
Did you do a car boot? So, no, I gave them to Oxfam. There's an Oxfam bookshop locally.
They're so good, aren't they? Yeah. Good cards in there.
And I'm really popular with them because people want to buy food books.
Yeah.
Big gift aid. Yeah, tag your bag. So this is the shelf that I use all the time.
Yeah.
When I've used something, I put it at this end so that I like to kind of keep a mild track of baking, reading.
Oh, that Dan Leppard book's there. Look how red that is.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, oh, yeah. My, that was a revelation, that
amazing
book. Useless for vegans, but amazing
obviously
for anyone else.
Yeah, in fact,
there's a few good breads in it, though, actually.
Yes.
There's a red wine and walnut.
Ooh.
Bread in that. Dan Leppard short and sweet.
Dan Leppard short and sweet is lovely because you can open it and you can find something. So I've had that since it was published.
Right.
I'm still making new stuff from it. I'm still opening it and thinking, what can I do for X's birthday, whatever.
I've had not the same, but a similar thing, as in someone recommended it to me off the cuff, got it, mind blown. Like the first 10 things I made from it, all stunning, like nothing else I'd ever had. And I've probably bought that book more than any other thing,
really,
idea forever. I bought it for so many people as a gift.
It's a lovely present. Yeah. And funnily enough, I was at The Guardian for a little while, looking after some of the food stuff, and Dan was doing a series of recipes and things for us. So I went round to his house and we made toffee and sugary things. I can't remember what exactly the theme was, but I think it was, you know, sweet things generally. So we made kind of treacly toffees wrapped in paper, and we made caramel and fudge and things with muscovado and calvados and things. And he's another example of a genuinely high quality human being.
Yeah.
And the food thing is not, you know, don't think it's coincidence. He's just a good guy. Cooking with him was really a huge privilege and really fantastic. So that's a really good book. Annie Bell's Baking Bible next to it is also really good. Doreen Allen, Ballymaloo will always be very present. All the Allen family.
I'm going to take a picture of this warm, delicious joy, of potential delicious joy.
Delicious joy. Yeah, you've got to heave.
What an amazing thing! I love it.
Yeah, it's really nice, and it's nice to be able to suggest recipe books to other people. And
yeah.
To, you know, if they say, "What should I get for this?" There's normally something, and even now I've reduced the size of what I've got from what I've got here.
Yeah,
It would be something from here that I would recommend. So that says a lot about.
So I'll ask one more thing about the critiquing.
Mm.
Well, one, you told me that once you got poisoned. That's not the one more thing.
it's health and safety wise, it's not always as healthy and safe as you would think.
Right.
So this was years ago, but me and my now husband went to do a review of a Sunday lunch place in the countryside. And I ordered the chicken, he ordered his thing, we ate it, we talked about it. I felt that my chicken was not as cooked as it could be. And I was like, I'm not, I think I'm just going to leave that. And he said, the kind, polite equivalent of, give it here, woman, I will eat it.
Yes.
So he thought that it was fine, so he ate it. And it wasn't fine. And he had three weeks off work with Campylobacter. He was really ill.
No, that's a bad one. He was 3 weeks off.
Yeah, he was very, very ill.
Did he have to get... Oh, my... He wasn't hospitalised.
He wasn't hospitalised, but I think...
Oh, no.
That's possibly because he didn't go. You know, he was pretty ill.
Shit.
Yes. And I can't remember, actually, whether the review was published or not. I don't know. I can't remember, because it presented itself after the...
What would happen in that situation? Would you have to go, can you even sing that? Because They nearly killed my husband.
I think by the time it became
it's
clear...
the least we can do, not advertise them.
But the thing is, you never know.
No.
Like, I had a recent experience at a chain restaurant where I was quite ill after something.
Right.
But in fact, they were excellent. I called them, they took me through all their paperwork, their processes.
Yeah.
But at the end of the day, I knew and she knew. It might have been that, but it might not have been.
Yeah.
And, you know, unless 20 other people are ill at the same time, it's just a, you know, shit happens. It's just a one-off. Somebody
unless you have
chicken.
The ability to make a PR disaster for them, really, then there's not a lot they can do.
And it was an independent restaurant, and, you know... It was bad. I wouldn't go around recommending
yeah,
it.
Yeah, yeah.
But it's just one of those things that you never think will happen.
Shocking.
Yes.
I've only ever had a few poisoning. I think I'm quite sturdy tongued. I've had a few 24 hours, but once as a teenager, my aunt bought us some amazing pasties from Cornwall. Like, you know, hand, whatever. This
hand crimped,
etc. But that she gave them to my mum, and my mum froze them, not knowing they'd already been frozen.
Ah.
And that was, ouch. I think, both of us were out for a fortnight. And mum told me afterwards, I mean, I was a child, but mum told me afterwards, oh, I did think maybe we would die.
Thanks, mum.
Thanks, mum. Thanks for not passing that at the time.
Yeah, my mum's quite... She's not lax in... food hygiene, but she was brought up in another time.
Yeah.
And she's, you know, she is eating that last, she'll put tablespoons of things in little pots.
Oh, really?
Yeah, that yogurt, the answer to is this yogurt all right is, it's fine. That's always the answer. Doesn't matter what the yogurt is, it's fine. And she's normally right.
Yum in my tum.
Going to make the sugary toffees and stuff. You must just think, those are the days, I'll get them, where you go, oh God, this is a great life I've made for myself. So, this is what I'm calling work.
Yeah.
How did you get into it?
I was incredibly lucky, really. I've always been interested in food. So my first job, you know, I didn't have a paper round, I worked in a kitchen.
Right.
In the pub in the village. And I've always been interested in it. I was encouraged to earn my own money.
Yeah.
And so restaurants and pubs and things is where I ended up. And then when I got to university and they were divvying up tasks on the student newspaper, because I've always known that I wanted to write as well.
Right.
All the lads went for music, a couple of them went for comedy.
Right.
But food was there, and there was nobody else who was rivaling. I would have wanted it, but there was nobody to say, no, I'm having it. So
brilliant.
It started there. And I've done other things, but food's always been part of whatever job I've had, so I've been really lucky. Yeah. I like writing, so it's the writing as well. It's because, like we were saying about describing food, like it's just endless possibilities.
I think you've been as talented as you've been lucky, to be honest. I think women are too quick to go, I just said ever so lucky. It was just the right person. That a fuck ton of graft, actually.
And I'm really we're a greedy family.
Right.
So
I've
got the appetite for it, and that definitely helps. So
perfect. Oh, well, we are too. Family of units. I'm happy of it. Tell me about testing your cookbook every week for Metro and then making your kids eat the results.
Well,
do your kids eat everything?
They'll try it.
Right.
They don't.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah, they don't finish it off every time. Yeah. You know, one of them will like something, one of them they've got irrational. One that doesn't like bananas, you know, just the normal stuff. But
irrational. An irrational hatred of bananas that are lovely.
Actually, I hate bananas. So.
Yeah. Oh, there we go.
Yes. But they will, they understand that it's not going to kill them, and they're not frightened of it, and they'll dig in. So it just happened that I was asked to do a cookbook column. Metro, my editor just said, so Metro, the magnificent commuter newspaper.
Yeah.
Back in the day, it had a lot more lifestyle content in the paper itself. I mean, the food section needed cookbook reviews, and I was asked to do it, and it just seemed natural that I would cook from them rather than just saying, no, I just got a new book out.
Yeah, the pictures are nice.
The pictures are lovely. So
the introduction's very witty. Yeah.
Exactly, but you've got to...
It's not the point, right? Yeah.
Since I started doing it, lots of other places do it as well. So most food magazines will have a cookbook review. A lot of food supplements have them. And it's just a really lovely, and because not all food books are tested properly, the recipes don't work.
Right.
There are ingredients missing. You know, it's not as simple as...
Well, talk to me about this, because you were saying as well. Sorry. Oh, finish that, but then, yeah.
Okay. So I just started doing a weekly cookbook test column, and we would extract recipes, and
did you get to choose what you cooked?
Yeah, I mean, sometimes publishing houses will only allow certain recipes to be printed, so there needs to be some crossover between what you're writing about and what the recipe that we can publish.
Yeah,
but for the most part, I could look through and say, okay, I'm going to do maybe one or two, but they have to work with, you know, so my husband doesn't, he's not mad keen on pasta, for example, so I wouldn't just be like, oh, I've made us a delicious pasta, because it would...
He wouldn't be able to be fair about that.
No, quite. So I would just look through and find what I wanted to cook and cook it, and then obviously you've got to eat it. So that includes, we're a family, that includes the kids, and for the most part...
What's the most gastro thing your kids have... The most fine dining that your kids have had on a Wednesday night?
My first one... was a Galvin cookbook, which I don't think I've still got, actually. And it was I think it might have been a dark chocolate sorbet.
How old were they?
Well, this would just have been the bigger one.
Okay.
So he would have been quite little at the time.
little 2-year-old having a dark chocolate sorbet.
And I think there might have been a souffle element as well, possibly. It was certainly... The sorbet was the junior partner to the dessert. I can't remember what it was, but... they don't care, like it's just dinner. So I didn't actually use to test the very fancy books a lot of the time. So it's got to be something that somebody could read about in the paper and think, oh, do you know what, I might get that and make that. But we've been watching, me and my older one have been watching Jamie Oliver's Italy series.
Right.
And he is seduced by,
is he?
Absolutely. Just
that's lovely.
The travel and the vistas that he's never seen before, and the colour and the people, and Jamie just... being approachable, and Gennaro and them having all the banter. He loves the... He's a young man. He loves the banter. And he just said to me, we've got to go to Italy and we've got to make... We've got to do this food. So I keep walking past the half price book in the shop thinking, I'm going to get that.
Yeah.
And we'll do some stuff together. Because he just... He loves the idea of it. So the idea of difference doesn't worry them. I mean, they, you know, they're
That's
kids.
That's very cool.
But they'll give it a whirl.
Yeah.
What's yours like?
He will eat anything. He will... It depends. If so, one day there'll be a week where he'll be all about the Baby Bell, and now he hasn't touched a Baby Bell for a month. He's like, he's flighty, fickle.
Yeah.
Fickle is the word. But he will try things in the right mood and at the right hunger. If he's not been allowed, I mean, he's constantly, constantly asking for food. He asked for pudding at the end of breakfast.
Oh yeah, mine do that. Yeah.
And he's just... It's cool, but it's... It's constant, so actually he needs really big distractions to not be just on a constant nibble on all day. The most proud I've ever been was when he ate, and obviously liked it, so it was just going in again and again and again, like a massive load of crispy kale at 2 years old. And I was like, well, part of me thinking, what have I created, little Lord Fauntleroy? And then the other part was thinking, good, get that iron in.
Was it quite salty? Was it?
I had gone light because I knew he was joining in.
Yeah.
But I hadn't put any sugar, no. If I'm making it just for me and my other half, tons of salt. Mm. Oh, mm-hmm. And even smoky salt. I don't know, just roasting brassicas generally has been revelatory.
Yeah.
It's all been in the last year that I've realised you can do that. All the different cabbages and that.
Oh, now you see, I've not had to do the cabbages because I would, if I was going to roast something, it may be a beast. So I don't have to resort to the brassicas. But we've been doing a lot of like tender stem in a hot pan.
Yeah.
Just so it goes really crunchy with olive oil and salt, so it goes really crunchy.
Yeah.
And that's really nice with hummus and bits and pieces.
Roasted Savoy cabbage with a meaty white fish.
Oh,
and you roast it in maybe fennel seeds and big wedges of lemon, giant wedges of it, 25 minutes.
Amazing.
Crispy outside, juicy lemony in the middle.
I've actually got a cabbage in the fridge.
Have you?
I have.
I got one in my veg box and I was like, what are we going to do with that? It's massive.
Yeah.
Roasted it and we devoured half a cabbage in one sitting.
Amazing.
Yeah.
Healthy.
Anyway, is it? There was a lot of oil involved.
Was
another
there?
Drink?
Yes, do you want a coffee?
I'd love another coffee.
Yes! Thank you. And then we can maybe go cake as well.
Yes! Oh, this is so lovely. Thank you so much. What's this?
So this is from Nigella Lawson's book, At My Table, and it's she calls it a lemon tender cake, because that's Nigella. And it's vegan, so it's made...
Is it?
Yeah.
It doesn't... Oh, God, it's good.
So it's made with...
I shouldn't sound so surprised.
Well, I mean, you said it, I couldn't possibly. But the shock says it all.
Thank you so much for making vegan stuff.
No,
for
that's
me.
My pleasure. I just thought, because it's like a little, it's a bit like going back to the days of testing recipe books. Like, it's not
it's
something that I normally do, so it is a little bit of a challenge. It's vegetable oil, coconut milk in the sponge, lemon zest, lemon juice and things, and then that's coconut yogurt.
Ooh.
Top with a blueberry compote.
Oh,
so let's go. Should we give it a whirl?
Yeah,
do you want to take a picture?
Me. I've taken pictures.
Okay, fantastic. So I think it's one of those ones which is probably eat it today, don't leave it till tomorrow.
Fine.
Because it's kind of soft and it's got quite a lot of baking powder in it. I'm not sure whether you're going to be able to taste the baking powder.
Shit.
But
I made a little video there.
Oh, did you? Oh, sweet. I love the way she describes things. So when she talks about putting the blueberry compote on this cake, so it's a white icing, the coconut yogurt all over, and then she says, put the blueberry compote in the middle, leaving a white frame around the edges. Oh, and not only do you know exactly what to do, you also enjoy following that instruction.
Yeah,
it's
yeah,
just such
yeah.
a...
Yeah, she just puts it... Beautiful writing as well as beautiful cooking.
Yeah, and then the fact that she's... A beautiful looking human being doesn't really matter because her. So I've been reading. So her How to Eat book is about to come out.
Oh,
to be reissued. I think it's 20 years. So there's been a lot of publicity about it and people talking about what that book meant to them.
Yes.
And talking about her skill generally and how it, you know, and how the fact that she's unbelievably hot is the least important thing.
No, the least important thing. I mean, I'm sure there will be elements of her exposure in her career that she'll have got because of that.
Mm-hmm.
Or actually, probably shit, she'll have taken increasingly more.
That's a yes.
God. Okay, right.
It's a strong yes.
For this cake?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, right.
Yeah.
Here we go. Oh my God.
That's really good.
That's so good. That's the opposite of every cliche about a vegan cake. It's so, I'm going to say it, moist. But it's like almost, I'm saying, if you're going to say it, you've got to really own it.
Well, it's not gussety moist,
is
it?
No. It is so tangy.
Mm.
That so citrus is powerful.
Mm.
And do you know what? I'm really particular about where I want to taste coconut. I think especially if you flirt with veganism, coconut introduces itself into the cheese world, the
it's
fake
everywhere.
Cheese world. It's a horror. And I love fresh coconut water can get fucked like this. I'm really off and on with coconut. This that tiny hint of it in that cream is magic with
it's
all that
really
other zing and it's so creamy but that's so sharp but that's
It's a brilliant recipe.
Oh my God, what a great recipe.
Mm. Yeah,
do you think when you make things with oils like that, then instead of butters or dairy products, that like you say, it's got to be eaten on the day? Like, it just don't have the shelf life? Because you wouldn't want that to start drying out because it's so perfect like this.
I don't know, because obviously carrot cake is normally vegetable oil, isn't it? And that can hang around for a while, but that's got a lot of moisture from the carrots and the raisins and things in it, so... It feels quite... It's not pancakey, but it's got that element of being like a fluffy...
Yeah.
A fluffy American pancake almost.
It has. It's almost puddingy.
Mm.
Oh.
It's a really good one.
It's a really good
when
cake.
When the kids come in, they will eat that.
Mm.
And they'll really like it as
They'll
well.
Be really happy with that.
Yeah.
Oh.
I mean, to be fair, they can take what they're given, but it's nice to know that they'll be happy with it.
Oh, I just think, as well, if you can have a lemony cake, it needs to be really lemony, and that is.
Yeah, really
wow, that's a showstopper. I'm very grateful.
It's an absolute pleasure.
You might know, someone told me yesterday, that, you know, not necessarily a reliable source, that most vegetable oil, like in big cheap vats, is actually rapeseed oil.
Well, I think that's probably true, probably, is it? Because I don't know, about the food labelling aspect of it.
Yeah.
But if it's from a vegetable source, you might think that rapeseed could be considered a vegetable source.
Because
it's not an animal source, is it? So
are we just all idiotically paying insane money for rapeseed oil?
Well, you'd be paying the insane money for extra virgin rapeseed oil, cold-pressed, okay. Premium. And the reason there's so much of that about is because I believe there was a farming premium, so all the farmers were incentivised to grow, you know, British rapeseed oil.
Right.
So that's, and obviously there's a market for high-quality single estate olive oil, so the thinking is, you know, people can be persuaded to have rapeseed oil instead because it's British and it's cold-pressed. And
is it a bit easier on the planet than olives? Someone told me that the beginning of olive oil faddery, and I still think that probably 75% of people don't understand what olive oil to use for what type of cooking. My boyfriend is always putting extra virgin olive oil on something that's about to be roasted, and you think, no.
Well, so am I. We shall have a chat about
that. Oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay. Oh, well, I'm intrigued.
I'm with him.
Are you?
You're outnumbered.
What, you think, put the posh oil even in, won't it burn?
Well, so, what started me up, so I took a sabbatical when I was about, 12 years ago now, I took a sabbatical and I did the 3-month course at Ballymaloe Cookery School in Ireland.
Right.
Bossed by Doreen Rallon, who is, she hates this, but she's the Irish Delia, but nobody's allowed to say it because she's not. In terms of profile, she's the Irish Delia.
Right.
She's also... The cookery school is on a multi-acre organic farm. They make their own cheese, etc., etc. She's a groundswoman. She grows, she cooks, she raises cattle, etc., etc.
Wicked.
Or her minions do.
Yeah.
And so one of the things they do is that they use extra virgin olive oil for everything. They just do.
Right.
If they're using olive oil, it is extra virgin olive oil.
Okay.
And that became my habit. I think I saw that there's some research that's come out that says that extra virgin olive oil does not burn dangerously at high temperatures.
Oh, really?
That's quite recent.
Oh, God, I just feel like my whole life has been a cycle of fake news.
Delete, repeat.
Yeah. Nothing, you can't believe anything you ever hear.
No, so I choose to believe the fabulous Irish woman who is 70 and amazing, very healthy and cooks with extra virgin olive oil, makes it taste delicious.
And the product of that cooking is always gorgeous. So
absolutely.
You can't be that wrong. Yeah. You would think, actually, wouldn't you, that... That you would know if you'd ruined something by using the wrong oil from how it tasted. And it tastes great whatever oil you cook in, as a rule, most things.
Yeah. So I do my roast potatoes in extra virgin olive oil.
Do you? Mm. Not duck fat?
No, because they're always a bit soggy. I think maybe my oven doesn't go up high enough.
Right, right.
Perhaps just rubbish at roast potatoes, but they're not. They're always better...
Nice.
So I would do an extra. So my mum gets goose fat at Christmas, and I'm like, dude, we're just gonna not use that.
Fascinating. So the olive oil thing was, I heard that much like what we're doing to Peru and Chile with our avocado obsession now, we did to Greece with our olive oil obsession in the 80s and 70s.
Oh, that's interesting.
In the beginning of kind of really globalised food market, everyone going nuts for extra virgin olive oil. And to grow an olive tree, the roots of an olive tree apparently very uniquely go straight down.
Oh,
really go down, 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 because they need a lot of water.
Mm.
But that's one of the reasons why Greece is as arid as it is and as cracked and broken, because they've just way, way overdone it on the olive trees.
Jesus, we're just bastards.
I mean, we're idiots. But that might be bollocks, but it's a great story.
Well, you just got to be prepared. If it bothers you, then you've got to be prepared to sit down at your computer for a couple of hours, really check whether that's the case, and then every time you go and buy extra virgin olive oil, make sure it's not a blend, including Greek olive oil, if you feel like that situation can be rectified. It's hard
work. And then on the other hand, I'm thinking now, poor Greece's economy.
Yes, and, exactly.
And thinking... Well, we've just established that everything we think we know is probably bollocks, and we'll all have to change our mind in half an hour.
I'm afraid so.
Hold up.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Finding your perfect home was hard, but thanks to Burrow, furnishing it has never been easier. Burrow's easy-to-assemble modular sofas and sectionals are made from premium, durable materials, including stain and scratch-resistant fabrics. So they're not just comfortable and stylish, they're built to last. Plus, every single Burrow order ships free right to your door. Right now, get 15% off your first order at burrow.com/ACAST. That's 15% off at burrow.com/ACAST.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
I want to pick up on something you said earlier about that recipes in cookery books aren't always tested properly.
Mm-hmm.
So are you saying that when a celebrity chef brings out a cookery book, they haven't hand-tested and crafted each recipe themselves?
Yes.
Does that ever happen?
So there are some chefs who are really well known for writing their own books. So Peter Gordon,
right,
of the Providors in London, I believe he writes his own books, and that's why he doesn't publish many books.
Right.
But if you think about, and it's not necessarily, if they've got a good team testing them for them, who understand their voice, who understand their tastes, it's no problem. It's not a problem that somebody who's really skilled, whose job is to test, devise, or write recipes for big name chefs,
I feel like
that's not a problem.
So recently I got, which I can see in your show, I got the Ottolenghi, a newer one called Simple.
Yeah.
He credits other, his chefs with coming up with the recipes in it.
That's because he's a good guy.
Yeah. But also you think, what good egg, but also like exactly like you're saying, everything in that is so on brand. It all tastes exactly like Ottolenghi food.
Mm.
There's no random, homely omelette in there. Not unless it's full of black garlic and harissa and whatever else. Nobody put a bacon sandwich in there. Imagine if one of his underlings.
Yeah. So, but I think what's nice with him is
we just press passed him by. Well, no, he's really let himself go the first time there's a bacon sarnie and a Ottolenghi
on white bread. But they, they're such huge operations. Like, I don't think Yotam is turning to his life partner with whom he has 2 kids or however many kids he's got and say, darling, I won't be back to bed until 2. I've just got to come up with another breakfast recipe for the breakfast chapter. He's got restaurants where people are developing ideas all the time.
Yeah.
He's going to call his team and say, dude, I need a breakfast recipe. Which one's selling right? Bring them over. Yeah. I'll test both of them.
Yeah.
I think it's varied, but I think the problem comes possibly in the middle grounds where publishing is being squeezed. Somebody's got a book deal, but the publisher or there isn't the money to spend ages testing everything loads of times. So, although I love cookery books and you can see from my shelves that I use them a lot, I really think there is nothing finer than a food magazine for good recipes, because Delicious, Olive and BBC Good Food, all the recipes in there are tested 3 times.
Right.
And before they go anywhere near being published, they work.
Yeah.
And when you're buying expensive ingredients, or even not buying expensive ingredients, you want to
know someone's checked.
Yeah.
What they're telling you makes sense.
Mm.
I feel actually, do you know what? I haven't thought about it, and I certainly haven't mentioned it on here. I feel annoyed when I try something. I do exactly what they say. And it's not, I think it's different. If it's baking and there's any sort of chemistry involved, I understand this. It's some of it's with the gods.
Yeah.
But when it's something that should work and it doesn't,
I'm
furious.
Quite rightly. That is your time.
Time, exactly. Either money, obviously. But, Oh.
Yeah. It's enough to... It makes me really cross, and it used to make me really cross when I tested recipe books. And
there's a recipe book up there called Scandalous. That one won't have been written by the chef.
That's... you mistake. You are quite a long way away. It's called Scandalicious.
Oh, Scandalicious. Fair enough. It's just delicious Scandinavian food.
Yes, absolutely.
Fine. Okay.
Sig, who wrote those, both of those books, is a fantastic
cook. Yeah. I thought that was just someone going, hands up, didn't write this.
Shit.
These are a load of shit. None of these will work.
No. Well, so, you just got to be aware that they're tested to greater or lesser degrees, and... Yeah. Especially if something's come from... If something starts off as a recipe for a restaurant, it starts off in a certain volume. You know, you've got to get X amount of portions out of it. If you then divide it by 20 to make it suitable to cook at home, something is perhaps lost in translation. And somebody needs to be involved with that book who knows how to translate recipes from big to small.
Yeah.
You need somebody who can downsize the recipes properly. Yeah. Otherwise... Jess gets cross.
Yeah, you get me fuming in the crappy little kitchen. I just want to say, I've just done a little burp. My mouth will taste of that cake. It's ringing with the citrus and the sugar, and it's so nice. And the coconut, I've got the most perfect after cake mouth. And then I just did a little toasted sesame burp.
Oh, no!
No, I loved it.
Oh, really?
I feel like I've had the most incredible... breakfast and breakfast pudding combination ever. Do you think that makes me disgusting? I really like it when you have great food and then you're reminded of it by a tiny burp.
I would say it makes you unusual.
Do you?
Yes.
Wagamama's burps, very nice.
Yes.
This is back in the day when I was still eating all that stuff. A Burger King bacon double cheeseburger burp. Heaven. Can't believe I'm telling a restaurant critic about how much I enjoy some of my burps.
We've got a Wagamama's near the office, and so if there's a birthday or something, that'll be where we go for how much ramen can you inhale in an hour?
Yeah.
And then so that's not going back into the office. That's not a situation where you want a Wagga's burp.
Is it? No, really? Yaki udon. Yeah. Quick little bow.
Yeah.
What's your favourite meal of the day?
Oh God.
Is that too hard? Have I asked you what's the best film of all time? It's probably impossible to answer.
Tea. Dinner.
Yeah. Okay. Fair enough. I'd agree, I think. I feel like I've really stumped you.
Really stumped me.
Sorry.
But all meals are so good.
Yeah.
And have so many possibilities. But tea, because it can really be anything.
Are you a more savoury person?
I used to be. Then when I was at university, I did Weight Watchers. And I know, shoot me later, I realised my faults. And to make you feel better, they have low-fat, high-sugar yogurt afterwards, or some strawberries or whatever. And I did that for the entire summer.
Oh, mate.
And now I've got a sweet tooth.
Oh, God, you did Weight Watchers and it gave you a sweet tooth. That's an advert for not doing it.
I like food of any stripe, sweet, savoury or anything in between. But I didn't have that requirement for sugar after a meal until I did Weight Watchers, and it's never left me afterwards.
That's really funny.
Delicious.
Have you ever done a travel that was particularly memorable because of what you ate there?
Yes, we got married in New York.
Ooh.
That was pretty good. So we'd been a couple of times previously, so there may have been an element of, let's go up here because look at that lovely site that we're going to go and see up there. We just happened to be passing this cream puff restaurant that's just opened that used to be in Japan and is now here, and it's amazing.
Wow.
So that's always really good. And then I've been lucky to go on press trips in the old-fashioned style, so where they take you to Tuscany and great truffle over your pasta, and that was pretty amazing. That was a spa trip, so the negatives were man doing massage and spa treatment, so you turn up with your mandated thing that's on the thing and it's a Swedish massage and it's a big fella.
Yeah.
Which is not for me.
Oh no!
But then
just all kit off and then just a giant man slapping you about.
Yes. And so that's fine if you're all open-minded and European.
And not if you're you.
Yes, correct. So there's another podcaster actually who uses the phrase never nude. She says, I'm a never nude.
You know, never nude. Yeah,
and I've got a great deal of sympathy with that approach. So, but then, you know.
I find that the older I get, the more I'm like, get them off. No, thank you.
No, thank you very much.
Okay, fine.
But yeah, the payoff for the weird press activities, you know, the sauna that's also a salt grotto or whatever, is the amazing dinners.
Pasta with truffle, grated over.
Yeah, man. Have it. That's vegan.
Well,
not with the egg pasta.
No, yeah, you'd have to all the cream probably in it.
Yeah.
Both.
Yeah, it's really good. And we did
fabulous.
Not for work, but I did a walking holiday through... Oh, God, I'm such a wanker. Walking holiday through Tuscany. And that was insanely good because it was bed and board at hotels and they weren't fancy hotels, but they were just like, have some amazing dinner. And so that was...
You're getting... I'm very jealous of that. 5 second rule, yes or no?
Depends on the state of the kitchen floor.
Okay.
But yes, veering towards yes.
Veering towards a cautious yes.
A cautious yes.
A sensible yes.
If I'd let a baby crawl on it, then I would pick up. If there was a baby in the house, I was like,
I love the idea. Hang on a minute. Only a mother could know that the baby was filthier than the floor. It's so true.
Yeah.
What's the strangest thing you've ever eaten?
Do you know what?
Have you ever eaten anything while it was still alive?
No.
Okay.
Nothing seems strange. It all seems... Really? Yeah, it all seems like food. So I had some duck's tongues the other day.
The other day?
The other day.
A duck's tongue?
Yes, it was battered. It was crispy. Crumbed. It was crispy crumbed. And I'm not lying.
Where did you have that?
I can't remember!
Was it in a restaurant, though?
Yes, it was in a restaurant. In a restaurant in these parts.
So on the one... So was it nice?
Yes.
So that one part of me is thinking, But the other part is thinking, why are you thinking, No one else is using a duck's tongue. And if the duck's dead anyway, for all the bits that are going to be used in your crispy pancake, great that a chef's using the tongue.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Did it have a flavour?
No, it's just stuff. Right. It's just stuff in crumb.
Yeah.
No.
just stuff.
Hot fried stuff in
hot
crumb.
Hot fried stuff.
I think recently I went to a restaurant which has been mentioned not by name on this podcast before by the great Faye Ripley.
Yeah.
I had tea there quite recently and they had some, I think it was sea bass, and it had been, he said to me very earnestly, have you heard of the Japanese way of killing fish? What they do is they put the hook in just in one place at the back of the head, special place, and it either kills them instantly or it stops them feeling any pain instantly. Yeah. Presumably it's some kind of thing with the spinal cord like a lobster.
Yeah.
But anyway, it means that the flesh is not flooded with adrenaline and the fish remains soft and wonderful. And there is one boat, apparently, off the southwest coast of England killing fish in the Japanese manner. And it was indeed soft. So they... It was delicious and delicate and wonderful.
It didn't taste as a scream of a suffocated sea bass.
Quite. So that was quite unusual. But those things, they just, you know... When it's your semi-working life, they just appear and you just...
You just have a duck in it. Before you know it, you're having a duck's tongue. Just for a bit of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So funny. I want to know about your world's rudest chef encounter.
Oh. So, for another feature, I used to have to talk to chefs about what they have in their cupboards, what they have in their fridges and things, and their set questions. And I think it was for that. And a lot of those, it's 10 minutes, you end up doing it on the phone, chefs are busy, etc., etc. The person involved, I'd interviewed previously, and he was not very nice. He was not very polite then either. But I thought, you know what? We need this. I'm going to do it. It's fine, etc., etc. The PR was on the phone at the same time. So sometimes, you know, have a double call where somebody's listening to you, talking to the person. And afterwards, she could not apologise enough. She was shocked and horrified. It was really bad. He was eating... He was smoking, he was making coffee, he was opening up his restaurant as we were talking. He wasn't listening. So, and you know, everyone has an off day and I can certainly be rude and offhand. I can absolutely be rude and offhand.
Do you get that thing sometimes where the phone rings and you pick it up and as you're failing to concentrate on what they're saying, you think, I don't know why I picked it up.
Yeah.
I would say probably 20% of phone calls I pick up, I think, I'm really stressed. I'm not being very nice to you. I'm not being present in this call.
Yeah.
It's almost always my mum or my sister. And I have to go, I'm on my way into a thing. And I am, but it's like, no. Oh, and then you come and feel really guilty.
Yeah.
Maybe he had that. I don't think he was being a turd.
Yeah, yeah. His name rhymes with Park Snicks.
Riddle you that, listeners. Riddle you that. But talking about eating when you're on the phone to them, did you say that Bob Mortimer did that?
Yeah.
But in a funny way, because it was Bob Mortimer.
Disappointingly, I would say never interview your heroes when they're eating a biscuit boost.
He was having a biscuit boost.
Well, in my mind, it was a biscuit boost because he was really enjoying it. And that's the chocolate bar that I would most enjoy whilst not giving an interview to an innocent journalist.
A boost.
They're really good. Really
what were you talking to him about?
It would have been some kind of lifestyle thing, like a tech. Because I used to write about telly as well, so it would have been a telly thing, probably.
I think his Twitter feed is one of the most brilliant things in the universe.
I haven't looked at it.
Oh, it's so funny. It's bonkers.
I keep meaning to listen to Atletico Mints as well.
Oh, it's supposed to be great. Yeah. Someone has built a real-life robo-orc and they're threatening to wreak havoc, jumping on cars, crushing schools, all whilst using really foul language and being all, like, slobbery and with, like, shocking body odour. Anyway, the robo-orc has agreed to go and live somewhere otherwise uninhabitable, like a bit of Australia, and never bother anyone again on its own. But only if you, and weirdly it does have to be you, do 4-hour-long HIIT classes on the bounce. Sounds impossible, but you do it! You're a hero! Your prize is the adulation of everyone on the planet, apart from maybe some Australians, forever and ever and ever. You're past that kind of knackered out, sweaty bit, you're allowed a shower or whatever. Your main reward is a feast of your dreams. Nothing in it has to be realistic, attainable. Let's give a shit about health. It's just the heavenly ideal. It doesn't even need to be things that exist necessarily or go together, anything like that, if you want. I want to know what you're eating, what you're drinking, who with and where.
Okay, so starters only, no main meal.
Right.
Because variety is key.
Yes.
So when I did the course at cookery course at Ballymaloe, they do plates of pots of pate and platters of smoked fish with pickled cucumber and delicious sauce and things, and mayonnaise and prawns and little bits and pieces and big chunky slices of aubergine fried on both sides in extra virgin olive oil. So those.
Yes.
And then, so the smell of some food can offend some people, and that can stop the person who's eating the food enjoying it.
Fine.
So this, the amazing English and Irish cheese board that we're having only smells to people who like it.
Nice! Magic cheese!
Magic cheese.
So, ooh, tell me some cheeses that are going to be on there.
Stitchelton. Definitely. Really nice. Cheddar. Goat's cheese, fine. I would probably let a chef choose it. So,
fine.
There's a restaurant in Lancashire called Moor Hall, and they have got a cheese room, and all everything within it is magnificent.
Ugh.
And so they would probably choose the cheese, but only the people who would enjoy it can smell it, so yes, they can really enjoy it. And then for pudding, simply Magnums.
If you're listening, I wish you could see him as well. It's just simply Magnums. We're just talking milk chocolate Magnums.
No, it would be the whole range.
All the Magnums, pistachio.
Coffee,
Magnum.
Black
Magnum. Oh, the black espresso Magnum, I know the one.
Raspberry Magnum.
There's a dark chocolate minty one sometimes available.
I don't
care about that. There's like a champagne, there's like a Prosecco and raspberry. Yes, get fucked as well.
Yes. So just just the ones I like.
Good.
And it would be like a Magnum buffet.
Yes.
So you can just, you know, stroll up and just take a Magnum
buffet.
Yeah. All at the perfect temperature, so just melting.
When's the last time you were in Greece?
Oh, years. When I was a kid, probably.
Next time you go, if it's soonish, they do an equivalent Magnum called a Lacta, which sounds disgusting.
It does.
Made with breast milk.
It does, yeah.
It's on par, if not better.
Ooh.
It's different, but majestic.
That interests me a lot.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Greece. We haven't booked anything for next year, so that's grand.
Okay.
Excellent.
I can recommend a really nice apartment Airbnb in Rhodes. Okay, cool, cool, cool. And that's that sorted. And who would you have there and where would you be?
Well,
for your magnum buffet.
I would have... Do you know what? If I'm perfectly honest, I would have an hour where it was just me.
Yes, yes! Do you know you're only one of two people who've ever said that? And it makes perfect sense. Yeah.
Then it would be reset so nobody could see the extent of my shame.
No, not shame. Delight. You deserve this.
Oh, yes, that's... Yeah, I've worked for it. I've forgotten about that. And just my close family would be grand. Right. And somewhere green, but not hot. So we've had some really nice Cornish pasties in a field somewhere in Cornwall, unsurprisingly. And the grass was really long and the children were tumbling around. It was all marvellous. And it was shady and it wasn't too hot because I'm anti-hot.
Right.
And it wasn't too bright, but it was nice to be outside. Somewhere like that.
Yeah.
Not Bob's
A spring
way.
Or an autumnal field.
Yes. Yes.
Lovely.
No insects.
Or maybe Wales, you know. Whenever I go to... I feel like Wales is the greenest green place. Have you ever been to the Hay Festival?
No, I'd love to.
That round there is green, the bright green of Wales.
Mm. In fact, we went to Ludlow a few years ago, and that's just on the borders, and that was, that was green, green, green. Or Ireland, but...
Oh, yes, just, of course. You know,
yeah, somewhere lovely and green.
But I can really... Yeah, there's a freshness to that. Yeah. What a great setting.
Delicious. Huge thanks to Emma Sturgis. Check out her writing in Olive magazine and elsewhere. She's on Twitter, of course, at Emma Sturgis, Sturges. Oh, that food was amazing. And to answer your immediate question, yes, of course I regret talking about how much I enjoyed that burp. I'm a fucking disgusting pig. And I laughed and laughed and laughed when I heard that back. What is wrong with me? Oh... I was in a grown-up's house, a stranger's house, and I just started talking about how much I enjoyed that burp. Animal. I think it's more than made up for, though. Were you as grossed out by the burp thing as I was by myself? By Emma's brilliant introduction to all of us of the concept of a magnum buffet. What a beautiful thing. Please tell everyone you can, all over the world, everyone you ever have any contact with, like E.T.'s finger, about this podcast. Join us on social media at The Hoovering Pod. We're on Instagram, Twitter, Facebook. Rate, review, subscribe, and follow me too at Jessica Fostercue. If you'd like to email me or see when my live gigs are, go to jessicafostercue.com. I really love hearing from you. Hoovering is produced by Emma Corsham and the music is by Mike Greenway. Until next week, happy hoovering.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.